Indeed, God give us Christian homes. Amen.
Amen.
Glad each of you are here this morning. We have a number of guests with us. We're pleased to have Brother Delton McGuire with us to conduct the seminar in Parenting in a Media-Filled World. The sermon will be a biblical sermon this morning rather than a presentation on that particular topic. If you heard him in Bible class hour this morning, you got a good introduction. Come back tonight at 6 o'clock and you'll hear the conclusion, particularly with dealing with media and television and the amount of television that affects our children's lives and how we can begin to regulate that. So look forward to those opportunities. Delton hails from Texas. He has served as a CEO and as a director of development of Cherokee Christian Children's Home in Texas and also preaches regularly. So we're pleased to have him with us this morning. Brother Delton, please share with us from the Word.
First, let me say again what a joy it is to be here. I travel a lot, not only for my work with the children's home. Somebody asked me what my home congregation was, and I said I was home four Sundays last year. I don't think that counts, okay? But nevertheless, it's okay with me to travel both for these presentations and for my work. Again, thank you for letting me be here. I appreciate your leadership's thought on how important this topic is. And I just want to help. I want to help families do better. Speaking of that, I did this presentation at a church near Austin, north of Austin. And actually, it was the second time I'd presented it over a period of years. And they called me up about 2 months later, 3 months later. And they said, Delton, we want you to put together another lesson. So we have families that aren't acting like families. We got families that just, you can't tell they're a Christian family. Can you put together a lesson on that? Now, of course, after years of social work, the first words out of my mouth were, I'm not a social worker, all right? And which technically I'm not. But nevertheless, I wanted to meet their needs, and I put together a lesson about how to be a good Christian family. And I just want to present that. It helps me in my role as a grandparent. It'll help you as your role as a grandparent or as a parent. A number of years ago, a study was completed by a professor of family studies at Oklahoma State University, OSU. And instead of looking at what was wrong with dysfunctional families, which is easy to do, that's the line of work I've been in for 30 years. Instead of that, he looked at what worked well with well-functioning families. He came upon six key points, and I want to share those with you, but I want to share them with you from a biblical perspective as well. The key characteristics were: they showed appreciation, they communicated well, they spent time together, they were committed to the family, they had a high degree of religious orientation, and they had the ability to deal with a crisis when it occurred. Let's spend some time looking at those this morning and seeing how we can help our families or how we can help our children and our grandchildren deal with these issues as well. The first one was expressing appreciation. And according to the research I looked at, he really thought this was number one, ahead of the others, the most important one. One of the most significant qualities of a strong family is that they consistently express appreciation for each other. They build each other up psychologically, and they make sure that each family member feels good about themselves and their role within the family. After all, we all want to be appreciated, every one of us. But we want it more from those that are close to us than from anybody else. Experts say that within our family environment, 80% of our communication needs to be positive. You can't always have positive. We still have to deal with problems. But 80% of what we say to each other should be positive. Let's look at Paul's sequence on this. Typically, in his epistles, there's a series of compliments and encouragement at the beginning. Then he deals with whatever he had to write about. And then he ends with strong encouragement. That's often called the sandwich method. Now, if we did that within our families, it would work just as well. And we have biblical teaching to back this up. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29, he told us, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification that it may impart grace to the hearers. Think about this. If we did this all the time, our world would change. A similar idea is found in 1 Thessalonians 5:11, where we read, "Therefore comfort each other and edify one another, just as you also are doing." Well, how can we do this? Start off with, you need to sit together at home and at church, but sit together at home and tell each other, talk to each other about what you appreciate about each other. You don't have to do it all the time, but you need to do it sometime. Try to give each other at least one compliment a day. It's not that hard, all right? Give each one a compliment a day. But the main thing you need to do is watch your speech patterns to increase the positive comments and let them be more than the negative comments. If we do that as a mother and father, our children are going to imitate what we do, and they will see those speech patterns, and they'll use those within their families as they grow up. Your world will be a better place if what you say within your family is mostly positive and not negative. I want to read Ephesians 4:29 again. "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." The second thing that well-functioning families do is they develop good communication patterns. And I'll spend a lot more time on this than the others because it's my field of study. But you might not have thought about it much, but your family operates as a system. I remember the first time I walked into a class in graduate school, and it was called systems communication. I had no idea what it was. I later found out, before the end of the first day, that it was about our family communication systems and just how important they are. We have, as a family, definable traits, habits, and patterns. Because of this, one glitch in the system messes everything up and can pretty well ruin the day for everybody. You all know what I'm talking about, all right, when you start off wrong. What I think of on this is you go to Walmart and you get that buggy that's got the one stuck wheel, all right? Okay, it will drive you crazy if you try to do all your shopping with that buggy, all right? It doesn't want to go the direction you want it to go in, all right? It stops when you don't want it to stop, so on. And that's what happens with us when we have glitches in our communication system. Now, of course, our system, of course, functions on communication, but what a lot of people don't realize, unless they studied it, is how our communication is set up. The experts tell us that only 7% of our communication is verbal. You might not have thought about that before, some of you, all right? 7% of our communication is verbal. What is the other 93%? Nonverbal. That includes about 38% voice tone. That's how high or low or loud or soft. Okay, stuff like that. That is a whole lot of our communication. And 55% is nonverbal. That is how you stand, how you sit, how you look, how you grimace, all those other kind of things. Now, if only 7% of our communication is verbal, how effective are we going to be when we're chatting on the internet? Okay? Those words are all that's there. And that's a totally different topic. I'm going to put a lecture together later on. But we need to remember that we're not really communicating on our phones. We're using that 1.7% that's available, the other 93%. Now, on the other side of that, how many of you husbands have been told, "That's not what I heard. What you said is not what I heard," or, "I don't like the way you said that"? Okay? All right? What you think you said is not what you said. Well, you know what words you used? What's the problem there? The problem is those other parts, okay? The way your face looked, the way you sat, eye contact, all those other kind of things. The only reason I emphasize this so much is we need to remember that words are a very, very small part of our communication process. And that is the reason it's so easy for things to get messed up. Admittedly, I really think the only way that I could properly communicate always the way I want to would be in front of a mirror, because then I know what I'm doing wrong. And my wife will tell you I do a lot of things wrong. Okay? All right? So we need that. So when you mix all this together, it is no wonder that we struggle to communicate as a family. No wonder we have problems communicating our message. And it makes it truly amazing when what we said is actually interpreted as it was supposed to be. That's rare. But that's also why it's so hard to do. Sometimes we as families would do better if we were aware of what those communication patterns are and work with them to make sure that what we think we're saying is what's actually heard. Can we use patterns and templates that work better for us? Yes, we can. Paul told us in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15, "But speaking the truth in love may grow up in all things into him who is head, Christ." If we speak the truth in love, it will help us more than any other communication pattern that we're going to put together. This means we need to say things with a good intent. We need to say things to help the other person because we love them. 1 Corinthians 13:16 tells us that love does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in truth. But another powerful communication tool is showing mutual respect and consideration. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 31 and 32 applies just as much to our physical families as it does to our spiritual families. Here Paul wrote, "Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you." If we dedicated ourselves to living out this message, it would revolutionize our families. Now, a little bit more about communication before we move on. One thing is clear from a lot of studies. Strong families do encourage the free expression of feelings, both positive and negative. We as males should be just as free to express our feelings as anyone in the house. And if we're allowed to do that, then we're allowed to give our wives and our children the opportunity to see what we really think and what we really feel. And in our culture, that's not always the case. We feel we have to be a certain way. No, we need to be allowed to show what we feel. Remember that our emotions are not right or wrong. Emotions are just that. They're emotions. They're natural. Remember how I said we're part of a family system? We need to know how the other parts of the family are feeling so that we can rejoice together with good things and we can work together in problem areas. And we need to remember that individual differences should be recognized. And as long as those individual differences don't go against God's word, and some could, then we need to live with them. And when it comes to our children, very similar concept. It is okay if they're different from each other. And as long as those differences are morally positive, then we should let our children be as they are. But another way to communicate better is to spend time doing it. And digital doesn't count, all right? That could be a whole sermon all by itself. Will be someday. But we need to listen actively. Six simple ways you can do that. Concentrate on what's being said when someone's speaking to you. Actually pay attention. Listen carefully to the real message. Try to interpret accordingly. And then a big problem we men have, we don't listen to the message before we start finding the solution, all right? We've usually got a solution halfway worked out before the whole message is even there. That's a common male problem. I'll say it out loud. We need to pay attention to the whole message before we find the solution to the problem. We need to sift through the irrelevant data. Some of what's being said is not important. Most of it is. Some of it's not. Check with the speaker to make sure that you hear them right. My wife and I have a rule after being married 38 years that whoever said it gets to interpret it. Whoever said it gets to interpret it, which means if I misinterpret something that she said, she gets to correct it, and we go with what she said, and vice versa. So whoever said it gets to correct it. Y'all, that can be pretty critical, because how often do you really hear what somebody else really said? All right. And the last thing is make sure that the speaker knows that you heard them and you're concerned. How many times have all of us gotten in trouble speaking with somebody and they said, "You weren't listening"? All right. "You didn't hear a word I said." All right. That's rude, and it's not good communication. We need to develop positive patterns of communication, both within our families and within our church family as well. It all starts with making some effort to do that. Now, the third function of a well-functioning family is they spend time together. It's hard to do. In this world we live in, it gets a little bit harder every day. You know, we have most of the mothers work, most of the dads work, a lot of the kids work, and how school takes up everything, if you've got teenagers especially. So how do you spend time together? Two things you need to consider about how to do this. Number one is your level, your degree or level of cohesion. How much into togetherness are you? Some families just aren't real heavy into togetherness. That's okay, all right, as long as you acknowledge and know where you're at there. Too little can be bad, and too much can be bad. But similar concept or similar issue that you need to look at is your degree of adaptability. Again, extremes are not good. Our children do have to develop their own autonomy. That's part of our responsibility as parents, is to let them develop the ability to get by on their own. Otherwise, they're going to be like I was talking about earlier, the 21-year-old acting like a 17-year-old. That's part of that problem. But they need guidance on how to get there. And they can't get that guidance unless you give them that guidance. So as I'll say all day long, you need to be a proactive parent. Your kids need to know what you think all the time. It's up to us as parents to show them how they should grow up. A lot of that is going to be modeling, but a lot of it is going to be what you say as well. And you can't do that if you don't spend enough time with them. We need to balance our time together with the work side as well. Now, work is a real problem because most of us, male and female, we work. And it just gets in the way. In order to get past that, it's going to take some effort. It's going to take some planning. You'll have to set your priorities. You may have to not do something that you want to do. You may have to not let your children do something they want to do. You need to monitor your organized activities because in this world, we can get too many, way too many. You need to control your work schedule as much as possible. Put family first if you can. It's always the best way to go. And you'll need to agree as a family on what kind of leisure activities you're going to do. And the real solution there, again, is compromise. There's things you like to do, and there's things your kids like to do. Well, split the difference, all right? Go do some things you might not like to do, all right? And let's make them go do things they might not like to do. But spend time together as a family. I know that when I was in graduate school, my kids were five, seven, and nine when I started. And I had a full-time job. I was a dispatcher for a trucking firm. And I was a full-time student. And I was a full-time dad. And there's 25 miles between all these locations in a triangle. So what did I do? I knew that my kids were at a critical point in their life where they needed to spend time with dad. And I wanted to spend time with my kids. My kids went to the SFA, Stephen F. Austin State University Library, more than any 7-year-old needed to go. All right? Okay. Why? Because that's where daddy went when he got off work. All right? I did a thesis, so I spent hundreds of hours in the library. But you know, I've had a good relationship with my children because of that. And really, for those of you that have to do something like that, the best quality time you'll ever have with your child is in that drive back and forth. Okay? And try, in today's world, try to tell them to put their phone up. All right? That's when you need to talk. Even the silence is good. All right? It's better than playing on the phone. All right? So use the time you have. Go out of your way to make sure that you spend time with your children. I eventually went to work for a children's home. I worked for four of them. I went to work for a children's home and spoke every Sunday night and Wednesday night, Sunday morning somewhere. And I don't think I had, out of about 100 trips I made, I think I had two where my kids weren't with me, one of them. I never took more than one. Okay. But I take one of my three kids with me. Y'all, it was worth it. Okay. It was worth the effort. You can't do everything together, but do some of it together. You also need to develop, number four, you need to cultivate commitment. Now, commitment hasn't always been held a positive connotation in this difficult world we live in. But successful families are committed to each other and to the family. What are the ingredients of family commitment? Very quickly, they are respect, mutual respect, trusting each other. It's difficult to build, harder to rebuild, but can be rebuilt. Acceptance, love them no matter what. Goals, have long-range goals for your children. Affirmation, tell each other what you think and feel about each other, being unselfish, being responsible to one another, understanding each other's needs and their personality, being honest in everything, being willing to be part of the family, letting tradition do its part, and religion. We should cultivate commitment to our family through our faith. As families, we need to make commitments to the husband and wife relationship as well, as all of our relationships, including those with our children, run the risk of falling apart if our relationship with our spouse falls apart as well. Fifth, a very important one. Healthy Christian families affirm their religious values. This wasn't a minister that put this report together. It was a university professor. But this is what he found out. He found out that faith is important to your family. What are the effects of Christian qualities on a family? Well, to start off with, it gives you, as a family, a sense of purpose and meaning. After all, Christianity is goal-oriented. It gives us a purpose. It gives meaning to our lives. The psalmist, Job, and the writer of Ecclesiastes all dealt with the universality of this topic. After all, our ultimate purpose, both as an individual and as a family, is to glorify God. Few things will last forever, but what we leave with our children and our grandchildren will last for a very, very long time. My favorite quote, not from the Bible, was from Neil Postman. He was considered one of, if not the greatest scholar in my field of study, which is mass communication. He wrote, and I have this on my wall at the house, in the office, "Children are the living messages we send to a time we will not see. Children are the living messages we send to a time we will not see." Y'all, that's an humbling responsibility. Our legacy with our children, both good and bad, will have eternal consequences and influence. Our faith gives our lives purpose and meaning. But there's another effect of being a family of faith, and that's gaining the strength and support that comes from the larger community of faith, the church. Being a family of faith gives us more patience when life is difficult. Being a family of faith helps us foster positive attitudes about life and about each other. And finally, being a family of faith gives us common values of faith to share within our family system. It gives us things to talk about. Now, what are the marks of a strong religious family as we conclude this section? Number one, you're sensitive to the spiritual needs of each other. If someone is struggling spiritually, you need and want to know that. You practice, as a family, you practice your faith in some form all the time. You see the church as a larger family system, a greater family. And a strong religious family assumes its responsibility for spiritual training of the children over and above what that child is going to get at church. I want to say that out loud again. A strong religious family assumes its responsibility for the spiritual training of its children over and above what that child will get at church. Bible study does not need to be just at church. It needs to be at home too. Let's look at the last characteristic because it is an important one. Strong Christian families deal positively with a crisis. Now, what is a crisis? It's defined as an emotional response to a hazardous situation. An emotional response to a hazardous situation. A true crisis occurs when we find ourselves unable to solve a problem by usual means. We just can't figure out what to do. Why do some people cope with a crisis well and others don't? Well, those that cope well, they've actually planned ahead. Doesn't mean they've sat around and worried about it, but it does mean they've looked at the options if something happens and considered how would they handle it. They've given it forethought. They're able to keep their cool, keep their heads clear when a crisis hits. Now, some don't cope well with the crisis because they don't have a support system. And for that reason, we as their Christian brothers and sisters, or as their neighbor, we need to be ready to help support them, even if it's just emotional help. Sometimes it may be physical. But support systems are needed and necessary. both within the church and within our neighborhoods. Some get by or get through a crisis because they put their faith into play. They're religiously grounded. Paul wrote in Romans chapter 8, verse 28, "And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose." To those who are called according to His purpose. Knowing this will allow us to focus. James told us how to cope. He said, James 1, verses 2 through 4, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Families that make it through a crisis, they've had past successes, they're open to their feelings, and they're willing to be flexible in their approach to the crisis. A crisis will produce growth. That's what James said. We need to prepare for our next crisis. It will occur. Now, as we put all this together, let's look at how the mix of these ingredients can help us as a well-functioning Christian family. Number one, decide that that's what you want to be. Decide you want to be a stronger Christian family. It takes effort. It takes forethought. It takes doing it. Begin doing the things the strong Christian families do. We've looked at some of them here. You can find others. Go out and look at other studies or other positive Christian-oriented material that would help you deal with a crisis. You don't always need to try to do it on your own. Some people have been through it, and they know how, and they can help you. But you also need to reach out to those families that need help and be ready to help them when they need help. And finally, whether it's a crisis or any of the other issues we've talked about here, there's nothing more important than praying about it. Prayer works better than anything, all right? Prayer is the most powerful tool that we have. So as you think about having a strong Christian family, think about the tools that we've looked at here, but also think about the strength that God has given us through prayer and take advantage of that. That concludes my lesson. I appreciate your listening. If anyone has a need we need to make known, now's a good time to do that. We never want to go home without giving anyone that might have a need. So let that be known right now as we stand and sing.